Welcome to First Things First, everyone. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. All good, guys?
Good morning.
Good morning. We got a big show today. A lot going on.
Man.
Cowboys front office, they're putting some pressure on Jason Garrett. We have a Lakers Hall of Famer who's getting fed up with his former team, but we are going to start with yet another bad loss for the Boston Celtics. They got blown out to the Toronto Raptors by 23 points, their biggest loss of the season thus far. Kyrie Irving, who just days ago said nobody could beat this Boston team in seven games, was held to just 7 points last night. Boston has now dropped five of their last seven. Is it chemistry? Is it effort? Is it personnel? Is it coaching? Here's Marcus Smart when asked what he thinks is wrong with this team.
We're just not together. Last couple of years, we were together, and when everything hit, to become stronger, we're not there yet. Like I said, we're going to get there. It's just taking time.
Marcus said that you guys aren't playing together. Is that a fair diagnosis?
Is Marcus the pain?
Is it yours?
Brad talked about just defensively, you guys have been taking shortcuts. So do you see that, and how do you guys fix things like that at this point in the season, you feel like?
I don't know. It's up to Brett.
Clearly, there's tension on this team. Clearly, there's frustration on this team. Nick, what do you think has led to what has been a very disappointing stretch for the Celtics?
Well, in the micro, last night was the continuation of a trend over these last three games. The road loss to Milwaukee, which was a good game, a one loss at Milwaukee. There's no shame in that. Then the awful loss to the Bulls, and then a blowout loss to the Raptors. And the trend is they absolutely have fallen apart in a time in a game where in years past, even at the beginning of this year, they excelled. That's when the bench unit comes in the second quarter. Look at what the Celtics have been in this three-game losing streak. The left column is what the point differential in the first quarter is. The right column is the second quarter. Every single one of these games, they've led after one and gotten obliterated during the second quarter.
Same thing last night.
Last night, it was as bad as it could possibly be. I think it was 36-13 in the second quarter. Kyrie goes to the bench. The team falls apart. Gordon Hayward gets more involved. Terry Rozier gets more involved. And they have no answers. And that, to me, is what is the most concerning thing for the Boston Celtics. Because amongst the other teams in the Eastern Conference, they are not going to have the most talented starting lineup. They do not have more talented starting lineup than Philly, than Milwaukee, nor than Toronto. But they're supposed to have more depth than everyone except for maybe Toronto. They're supposed to have a second unit that was good enough to be a starting five.
Yeah, they're supposed to be eight deep.
Absolutely.
Where all eight of those 100%. Players could start.
And when that second unit comes in, they have fallen apart. So that's the micro. The macro is what I have been trying to say all year long, which is there is no there with this team. What are the Celtics great at? Once upon a time, they were a great defensive team. Now they're a good defensive team. They've never been a great offensive team. Aside from Kyrie Irving going isolation, which is not what Brad Stevens wants to do, what is the thing that they are great at? We know what Toronto's great at. We know what Milwaukee's great at. We know what Philadelphia, and in their best case scenario, can be great at. What are the Celtics great at? And why can they not win against good teams on the road? These are all real questions we have to answer. And at this point, the easiest answer is probably the right one. They're just a good team. They're a fine basketball team. Mm-hmm. They're a type of team that typically gets to the second round of the NBA playoffs and gets bounced. That's what they've looked like all year long.
But our problem is where they were last year. You add two all-stars that were hurt, Gordon Hayward, Kyrie Irving, Brad Stevens, one of the best coaches in the NBA. You add him to the mix with these young players and how they had grown in Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They signed Marcus Smart to be able to come back. Marcus Morris, a great veteran player. Man, he can play for me.
Having his best year.
Al Horford, he can play for me. These guys are not me guys. They're great guys. Everywhere they've been, their teammates rant and rave about them. So, man, what's the problem? In the NBA, when you look at the best teams, we can go up and down, go to the East, go to the West, but typically you can identify a team with a name and say, you know something? It's that guy's team. But in Boston, I mean, they were supposed to be a collection of very good with Gordon Hayward coming over. He's going to recover from this injury. Like, they're really, really talented, their first eight. But Whose team is it? Because we know Golden State, regardless of what they say, KD might think it is, Klay is enjoying himself.
It's Steph's team.
It's Steph's team. Right?
I think you don't think Boston is clearly Kyrie's team?
Oh, no. Because let's look up and down. It's in Milwaukee, we know. It's Giannis. In Philadelphia.
It's Embiid.
All right, in Toronto.
It's Kawhi.
It might be rented, but
sure,
it's...
but it's Kawhi's team.
So when you look at it, OKC, whose team is it?
Well, it used to be Russ's team. I think Paul George is taking it, but...
Paul George don't care. It's
right,
Russ's team.
It's Russ's team. Got it.
Up and sure. down it. We know in Houston. It's clear.
Harden's team.
Now, one of the reasons why Kyrie left Cleveland, and one of the things that he stated was, I want my own team. Mm-hmm. Also, I want to be under a coach where I feel like I can grow. Those are things he stated. I don't believe that Kyrie believes that Brad Stevens, now he's been there, is as good a coach as people had thought. And Kyrie didn't pick the Celtics. So this is not his team. And you can see that. When they, that first quarter, like you was, if you say, okay, I'm just going to go to bed now. Mm-hmm. You are not going to believe what's getting ready to happen for the next three quarters.
And only minutes later.
And the reason why, because Kyrie could stop all that. Just like easily he could say something in the press conference, but he realizes in trying to be a leader, he said too much. Now he's trying to dial it back, but they don't like being with each other. No, that team doesn't have an identity. So that's where the Celtics are right now, Jim.
I want to ask you a question about Kyrie. Kyrie has played in 5 of the last 7 games. The Celtics lost all 5 of them. The 2 he didn't play in, they won. How do you explain that when maybe he's not the face of the team, but he certainly should be?
It is, to me, one of the more inexplicable stats throughout this NBA season is that the Celtics have been better when Kyrie's been out, win-loss record, and all their metrics have been worse when he's off the court versus when he's on the court. So all the analytics say the Celtics, and the eye test, to me, says the Celtics are better when Kyrie's playing. Within these games that he is playing in the game,
sure,
when he goes to the bench, they get much worse. But they have been uncanny in their ability when they are the team they were in the playoffs last year, which is really all it takes is removing Kyrie from the lineup for a game, and they're the team they were last year because Gordon Hayward is not a big factor for this team one way or the other. As soon as that happens, they become the team that was a game away from the finals last year. I can't listen. I've watched the Celtics incredibly closely, as I know you have, Chris. I can't explain that because I actually think Kyrie's having the best year of his career, so it doesn't make sense. But we now have a big enough sample. There is something to that.
Brad Stevens has the type of system that might work better with less talent. Also, when Terry Rozier takes over the point guard, he lets you know he can take over a team. So when he takes over and fills in, you know what the Celtics become? They become a system team. You know what? They move the ball more. You know something, too? It becomes a, you know, we're not as talented, but I got your back. He's got his back. He's got his back. So collectively, they play better defense. That's who the Celtics were last year. That's what got them to the finals. And when Kyrie is not on the court, that's what you're seeing. So the analytics and everything, they might say something else. But on the court, when Terry Rozier is the point guard, and right, that's what the Celtics are going to have to be, because they're in a tough place because Kyrie holds all the cards. But I believe that Terry Rozier is going to be the point guard of their future because their system offensively is based on ball movement. Defense in the NBA is not based on talent. It's based on, am I going to buy into, I will protect you at all costs. I will make myself look bad. And when we don't see that with the Lakers, you get bad defense. Yes, are they better with Lonzo Ball on the court? Yes, but when you don't have that, I'm buying in for my brother. Across the NBA, you will not get good defense.
If it's a Brad Stevens system issue, then the reality is this offseason, Brad Stevens needs to adjust the system. Because if your system works best...
But the system worked last year and was successful.
But it didn't, because they would have gotten washed in the finals. They lost to a Cavs team that was LeBron and a bunch of guys. If your system maxes out when you have not maximum talent, then your system is not an NBA championship system. Because we know this, in the NBA, if you need a good system, you need a good coach, you need all those things. To win championships,
you
must have elite talent.
A dude.
And so if whatever tweaks you need to make to your system, if you're right, Chris, those tweaks need to be made. Because whether the Celtics keep Kyrie or not, whether they trade for Anthony Davis or not, or whether they just hope Jason Tatum turns into that guy, you need a system that is at its best when you've got an MVP-caliber player on the court. Because if not, You max out at, hey, that team overachieved again and got bounced in the conference finals. That team, wow, how'd they win 51 games and get bounced in the second round? That's not what the Celtics' plan is. That's not what they've been preached about. And one last point before we go. Kyrie's interview, there's very interesting. Reading some reports from the local media after the game, when the locker room opened up, sitting next to Kyrie Irving, talking to him quietly, was Danny Ainge. I'm very curious what those conversations have been like, what they are like, and how much Danny was maybe doing some preemptive triage on, listen, man, let's keep the frustration right here. Because Kyrie answered 5 questions, said 18 words in his post-game interview, and we can read into it, but it's a lot better than some of the interviews he's done in the past where it becomes a big story. I wonder how much of that was the counsel from Danny Ainge right before we got to hear from him.
Interesting stuff. All right, let's take a break. Coming up, the Cowboys, they're putting pressure on Jason Garrett. That's next on FS1, and you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We will be right back. Welcome back. We'll talk some Cowboys in a second, but first, college hoops. Liberty University's Caleb Holmesley with a one-handed throwdown. My, oh, my.
Liberty University's been in the highlights a few times. They got a new big-time football coach now, too, the guy from Ole Miss going there, Hugh Freeze. Forgot his name for a moment. Appreciate that.
To the G League now, Grayson Allen playing for the Salt Lake City Stars. A little one-handed alley-oop.
And I wish luck to Grayson Allen. And Salt Lake City is about the biggest city I anticipate he'll be playing basketball in over the next few years. A lot of Fort Wayne's in his future. Boise, maybe. Grayson.
Man, I hope one day he gets back to the NBA, man.
Okay. Well, there's one person on the desk rooting for him.
Knicks, Magic, Alonzo, Tree are getting to the basket with the spin move before the nice layup.
Now, he's a good pickup.
Woo!
Absolutely. Wherever they found him, whoever found him, man, they did a good job of finding him.
That's probably Scott Perry would be my guess. That is, Mitchell Robinson's been fun for them. Now, they've won a couple games in a row. That's not part of the plan.
Yes,
but
right.
It's a good win.
Thunder Bad Nuggets, win. Paul win. George gets the ball on the fast break, rocks the rim. Boom.
Rough game for Paul George last night, actually. But Denver
got off to a slow start.
Denver's been the toughest place to win in the NBA this year. I think they're 27-4 at home so far this season.
But Paul George, the last 25 games, has been spectacular.
All right, let's move on to the Dallas Cowboys. They've got a busy offseason ahead of them, a to-do list with a number of players they want to sign. They also have a big question mark with Jason Garrett entering the final year of his head coaching contract. Despite being on the hot seat most of the year, Dallas won the NFC East and a playoff game against Seattle. However, Stephen Jones says the Cowboys will not be complacent moving forward.
No one thinks more of him than we do. But at the same time, I know he uses it. Everybody's back's against the wall right now. We've got a really good young team. We've got high expectations for this young team. And everybody from Jason to his staff to our players to ownership to the organization feels the pressure to take the next step. Our fans deserve that. And we hadn't done it. We hadn't done it in a long time. And we certainly feel the pressure to do it.
CeCe, I feel like we were asking this question a lot last year when it comes to Jason Garrett, but is this coming season now going to be a make or break season for the head coach?
I don't think it should be. You know, to me, I think it's a good fit with the ownership there. Jerry always talks about there's no bigger fan of Jason Garrett. Well, then at some point, I think before the season, they should extend him. He shouldn't be a lame duck coach going into last year. It's hard to coach that way. It's hard to have the authority over the locker room when you're coaching for your livelihood, because will you make the right decisions game in, game out, if I don't have a contract going forward? So I don't believe it's the right thing. I don't believe he should be coaching. Now, there's probably a lot of other people think, well, there are better coaches out there for the Dallas Cowboys. Well, based on who the ownership is, I don't think so. So I know you might think you want to grab a young guy, but I think he is the right fit. They should give him an extension. Those are tough conditions to work under, but it really should be about some continuity. I'm concerned about the offense. I'm concerned about who's going to call plays. I'm concerned about the overall identity. Will they go back to a run-first team, an offensive dominant team? Because they have to be able to get some variance in their offense if they want to continue to try to grow. So I like the fact that that offensive line, that should be the dominant part of the offense. So we need someone to develop opposite of Amari Cooper, need to develop a tight end. Also, Ezekiel Elliott, you have to get him the ball out of the backfield, throwing him the ball in this season, because that's what you expect as a running back for him to be able to grow that part of his game. Defensively, they're going to have to get a couple defensive linemen. They need a playmaker at safety, someone who can be able to turn the football over, someone that's better in man-to-man coverage against tight ends down the middle of the field. So that's what they should be working on. You can't go into the season worrying about the coach when they got some legitimate question marks. Kellen Moore being the offensive coordinator, first time as a young player. John Kitna taking over coaching the quarterbacks. What is he going to do? So you don't want that to start to permeate the locker room and people question, is Jerry running this year or is Jason Garrett still in control?
Yesterday wasn't a great day for Cowboys fans because of the Randy Gregory news and potentially with the David Irving news. But I think if you're a Cowboys fan, I think those comments from Stephen Jones really should make you feel good about where the team's mindset is. And here's why. I would have expected the Cowboys to feel great about last season. Started 3-5. The last 10 games of the year, including the playoffs, 8-2. You win a playoff game for the first time since 2014, just the second time in the Jason Garrett era. You're in the second round. You're one of the last 8 teams remaining. There's a lot of reasons where I would have expected to hear from Steven or Jerry saying everything's going in the right direction.
Rest on their
feel
laurels.
Great. And even if they're not resting on their laurels, to publicly say, hey, guys, it started off tough. Once we got Amari Cooper, we're one of the best teams in football. Instead, they're saying what I think is more accurate and more honest, which is this is a very important year. This is, we do have an expensive offensive line, a superstar running back. We think now a star wide receiver. Obviously, we like our quarterback. This is an important year to not just be fighting for the last division spot available or fighting for a wild card spot. To go into the season saying, if we don't get back to a conference championship game for the first time in what is now over 2 decades, then it has been a failure. Like, I think that is because there are a lot of teams that I think would have had the type of season the Cowboys had, which is it's over at the midway point and then right. It turns around and say, you know what? That's who we were. That's where we're picking up. We feel great. Mm-hmm. So I think part of that urgency is one of the reasons they're not giving Jason Garrett the contract extension, which is, the audience should know, very odd. It's very odd in the NFL for a NFL coach to to ever have to coach the final year of his deal. Particularly, the only time you ever see it happen really is if he's on his first contract with a team and they were probably going to fire him after year 3, but then at the end of year 3 you win 4 in a row, they're like, "Okay, we'll give you at least the beginning of year 4." So it's an odd situation, but I understand why they're doing it.
You guys have said often, not every team in this league is playing to win a Super Bowl. Some of them are just playing, and the Cowboys have always been that team that plays to win a Super Bowl, and it seems like, to your point, they've gotten away from that the last couple years and been satisfied with making it to the playoffs or having a guy like Zeke or the promising career that Dak's going to have. And you're right. It's nice to see that now maybe the bar has been re-raised again to back where Dallas Cowboys standards used to be.
Well, the one thing Dallas has to do, they have to get off to a fast start. You can't try to overcome what they had to last year. You know the competition in the NFC. Nick always points it out as far as the types of quarterbacks that you're going to be going against. Man, you're going to have a good football team to be able to get into the championship game, let alone a Super Bowl. The New York Football Giants, they've been off a couple years. We expect them to get better. The Washington Redskins are the only team in that division that typically might go backwards from where they were because we don't know about Alex Smith and their quarterback situation. We know Philadelphia. They got 2 quarterbacks there, and they got a talented roster, and they might add more talent to that roster this offseason, even though they have some cap problems. But the Dallas Cowboys, they're in a tough situation. How do they get better? They have to be more efficient throwing the football. The same thing we've been talking about the last couple years. Now they have Amari Cooper. So him and Dak have a whole offseason to be able to work. So that's one part of the passing game. They need to be able to attack deep down the field because they're not a deep, effective, throwing the ball deep football team. They don't have a change of pace. I know Cole Beasley in the slot. he'll be sufficient, but they need a number two wide receiver. Will that be Allen Hurns? They're very excited. He's going to come off of his surgery. He had that horrific injury at the end of the season. He should be like a number three guy. They need their tight ends to develop because for 12 games last year, their tight end was non-existent in this offense. So what type of theme will Kellen Moore, very, very young, the pressure of calling plays for the Dallas Cowboys, what does that do for him? Does that empower him, or does, man, who is he? Because we don't know that.
Will he even be allowed to call plays throughout the whole year? Is it going to be more Jason Garrett taking that smothering over? Right. And so that, but this Cowboys era, the Jason Garrett era, which is now going on year 10, has been defined by stops and starts. They go 12-4, the Dez didn't catch it year. Mm-hmm. And the next year, Romo gets hurt, and they win four games. They then draft Dak, and Romo gets hurt. They go 13-3. They have the epic playoff game against Aaron Rodgers. They lose on a field goal. And the next year, they go 9-7. Now, they make the playoffs. Will this be another year where the following year they take a step back? They haven't made back-to-back playoffs since the triplets era. So that's what's
on. That's a real goal.
That's a real goal, and that, to me, is what Stephen Jones is talking about, is we can't be satisfied. And, yeah, it's not a Super Bowl or bust year, even if, obviously, they're one of the teams that is Super Bowl-focused. But it is a, we can't be 6-6 and saying, man, but we're alive if we go 4-0 down the stretch.
Right.
The standard and the level of talent they have is higher than that and should demand more than that.
All right, we'll take a break there. Coming up, another team where the standard should be a little higher, the Lakers. Are they in danger of missing out on a free agent this summer? That's next on First Things First. Here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolutions. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify. With more than 150,000 podcasts, including many of the world's most popular self-improvement shows, you can learn how to balance a budget, balance your diet, and even learn how to feel balanced while meditating. All podcasts on Spotify are free, and you can download episodes for those times when you've gone off the grid, you know, to get all that newfound balance back into your life. So start the year off right and start listening to podcasts on Spotify. FIFA Women's World Cup kicks off in just 100 days. All eyes will be on Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd, and the U.S. Women's National Team as the defending champs head to France. They're just going to France.
Thanks.
All the matches will be live on Fox and FS1. See what happens when
I'm not excited
fancy
for Jenna to say France again, but I am excited for that.
That'll be fun.
U.S. women.
Time for us
dominate
to go viral. All right, so yesterday, members of the Portland Trailblazers got stuck in an elevator for 30 minutes at Emerson College in downtown Boston. Enes Kanter and Myers Leonard documented the whole thing for social media, which was interesting. I will tell you, 2 weeks ago, I got stuck in the elevator here at Fox. The last thing I wanted to do was pull out my phone, and that was the last. So I'm very entertained by the fact that they...
Everybody be careful now.
One of my all-time fears, man. Not about the elevator dropping, but being trapped in that type of confined space with other human beings.
How many guys were coming out of here?
Yeah, no. C always tries to screw with me, get me on these elevators with a bunch of strangers, not my thing, then starts real awkward conversation with me.
Yeah, I got stuck in my elevator earlier in the football season.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they called the fire department and everything. They came in there, man, I was in there sitting down nice and cool, working on my...
But if it was us... Can you imagine the great dialogue?
I feel like I'm already stuck.
I'd climb out. I'd jump.
You guys are the worst. I would love to be stuck with you, too.
Oh, please.
Yeah. There's so many things I want to know about you.
No. Jenna.
Tell you about me. Time for stories to start your morning. Tough news for the Dallas Cowboys. Defensive end Randy Gregory was suspended indefinitely by the NFL for violating the league's substance abuse policy. CeCe, what was your reaction when you heard this?
Not only Randy Gregory, but it's been a sad story last several years. How many talented players have we lost because their inability, once they get in the drug program, once they get suspended, once they have that 3 testing a week, it's hard to survive. So I'm always an advocate for people. And Randy Gregory, I've been in conversations with him. I wrote a letter to the league. So anytime this happens, I know addiction, it's about, man, trying to love people. And typically situations like this, it's hard for normal people to understand. So my heart goes out to him and his family. But, man, we're in a bad, bad stretch of quality football players that are losing their career over substance abuse.
When C says you wrote a letter for him, you advocating for the NFL to get back into the league. And I don't think, I don't want to speak for you, just because this happened, I don't think you regret that. I think it was. And you and I talked before the show, like, this is something that you will continue to battle the rest of your life.
Right.
That you still have to keep a program. You still have to keep with personal and mental maintenance on these things. So this, I don't like when people hear this and they're like, oh, what a moron. It's not about that. It stinks. It's bad for the Cowboys. It's obviously really bad for Randy. Mm-hmm. But the hope is, football or otherwise, that he can get back on the program he was on for the better part of the last year that allowed him to play in the league.
To the NBA now. The Celtics got blown out by the Raptors last night. They've now dropped 5 of their last 7 games. Nick, what has gone so wrong for Boston?
Not that good. Some people thought that all year long, and people thought I was just making it up. I need to see some evidence that they're one of the 5 or 6 best teams in the league. I've seen no evidence of it all year long. I need to see some evidence that this team, as good as Kyrie has been individually, that this team with Kyrie can go on the road and beat good teams. Because I haven't seen evidence of that either. They've now lost 3 in a row in 5 of 7. The 2 they haven't won, or they haven't lost. Kyrie actually happened to be out. Celtics in a bad way right now.
Yeah,
Steve.
People think about talent. Talent is one thing. But, man, when you show up to your job and you don't like who you work with, it is affecting, especially in team sports. And right now, that's what we keep forgetting. Get what we're seeing. What have we heard from the Celtics the last month? Oh, it's not fun to play basketball. Well, how can you not be having fun being in the NBA? One of the rarest athletes in the world. Like, it's not fun. You only got 82 games. Like, that right there.
The only way it's not fun is if you don't enjoy the people you work with. That's the only way the NBA life, with the money and the travel and the ability, is if you don't enjoy the
people. That's what I'm talking about.
I mean, that's the reality of it, and that's something Boston's running out of time to figure out.
Man, I had a job like that before.
The Nuggets, you don't anymore. The Nuggets beat the Thunder 121-112 last night. They were led by Nikola Jokic, who had 36 points, 10 assists, 9 boards. Now just a game back of the Golden State Warriors. Nick, is Denver a legitimate threat in the West?
To me, not a legitimate threat to reach the NBA Finals. I don't think they, as good as Jokic is throughout the game, he is not the end-of-game closer I think they need, but he was excellent last night, and I really, really, and they've been the best home team in the league this year, 27-4. So if they do get home court, they're going to be a tough out for anybody. But I liked what Jokic said. He got MVP chance during the game, and he said, listen, those are pretty funny to me. There's obviously players in the league better than I am, playing better than I am. I just go out there every night and try to improve. And he has been excellent. He has been. If the MVP ballot went to 10 names, he'd be on there. He's been great. And the Nuggets have been unstoppable at home this
year.
The
other thing, because we always talk about the Lakers and their lack of developing young players. Mm-hmm. Denver and what they do. Man, they got some good young players. And it's nice that Jokic can get that type of attention. So coming down the stretch, we should have more eyes on Denver, because they've actually earned it.
Speaking of the Lakers, more on their disappointing season. 3 games back of the 8th seed, which is 22 games left to go. I'd say that's disappointing. Not great when you got the best player in the game on your team. One columnist at the San Francisco Chronicle said, quote, makes no sense for a big name to join LeBron and the Lakers in free agency this summer. Nick, you buying this?
All right, let's all calm down. Let's not overreact to what has been unquestionably a bad, we're now on 2-month stretch for the Lakers. From the moment LeBron James said, I felt the pop on Christmas Day, to right now, it's gone about as badly as it could for the Lakers. But unless LeBron went from, in the span of 9 months, the consensus unquestioned best player in the world, to where now he's, wow, that contract's gonna be an albatross for them, they're still in Los Angeles. They still have a guy, when healthy, who's the best player in the world, or even if you don't believe that anymore, one of the 3 best players in the world, and they have max salary cap space. This columnist in Golden State, or in the San Francisco area, I think it's a little self-serving. I think he knows Kevin Durant's probably leaving, and if that happens, LeBron James plus another superstar, we have seen that team beat
the Kevin Durant-less Golden State Warriors. So, no, I don't buy that, well, the sky is falling, LeBron's kingdom is crumbling, because it's been a bad 2 months that right smack dab in the middle of it coincided with LeBron's first injury of his career.
I've been doing this long enough that I like when we have moments like this, especially a columnist from San Francisco, you know, with the rivalry with Los Angeles and especially with LeBron being there now. It's hard sometimes not to write something that's slanted in your favor. And so I went back and got something, the San Francisco Chronicle, that they wrote July the 4th. Nick, I want you to read that.
Okay, like July the 4th of 2016.
Yes.
All right.
The day after they signed Kevin Durant.
Headline, Warriors will never be the same after signing Kevin Durant. Hooray, sort of. By landing Kevin Durant, the Warriors have pulled off the greatest coup in the NBA since LeBron James took his talents to South Beach. The Warriors' amazing transformation from longtime beat-down losers to America's hoops team has taken another giant step. It's the story when they got Kevin Durant and talking about, we're excited, but it's going to be different now.
It's going to be very different, and the reason why is because we believe in Steph, but we don't believe in Steph going against LeBron. Wherever he is. And he said he had to put LeBron back into the story. They know the danger in the next couple years, especially with Kevin Durant. They know it's real. We saw the turmoil. We saw what Draymond said. We didn't make that up. Kevin Durant not committing to the Golden State Warriors, it's affect how people write stories. And him going there ultimately affected how they looked at that basketball team. But everyone in the basketball world knows they better not give LeBron another superstar while he's in his prime, because he is the only player that the Warriors are terrified about. They're not afraid of James Harden. They're not afraid of Giannis. They haven't seen Giannis yet.
They might one day be, but
they're not afraid of Kawhi. They're not afraid of Kyrie Irving and the Celtics. LeBron James is that guy. And the reason why, because they have felt it and they have seen it. We cannot forget how well LeBron has played. Forget about the series, how many games they won, how many they lost. But in those series, the numbers and the impact LeBron had on the game, almost playing the whole game with no help or a little bit of help, they have
NBA
not forgotten
finals,
that.
The four NBA finals, this is off the top of my head, against the Warriors. The first one with Love and Kyrie out, 36-13-9, and went to six games. The second one, down 3-1, greatest three-game stretch in the history of basketball. They win the championship. The third one, he averaged a triple-double, and last year started the finals with a 51-9-9, with his second-best player being
right.
Jeff
And they're
Green.
One stop away from changing that series.
Absolutely.
Can I just play devil's advocate for a second? So let's talk about today, February 27th. Is it on the table that a superstar out there says, if I'm going to make a big move like this, I want to win, I want to play with the best LeBron James, like LeBron James as the best player in the league, a healthy LeBron James, and a team that I know is going to be built around us that we could win. None of those things are really true for the Lakers right now. Maybe he is just injured and he'll get back to vintage LeBron, but is it on the table that maybe that's the thought process that one of these superstars might be thinking?
Well, I think it might be. It certainly could be the thought process that one of these superstars is thinking, but it's much like if you're on trial. You only need to convince one juror that you didn't do it, and you ain't going to jail. Like, they only need to convince one free agent. Mm-hmm. And LeBron has relationships with all these guys, and the respect level that he has amongst the other stars in the league. I just want to go ahead, C.
And it's the Lakers. Well, LeBron's on the Lakers. So, before LeBron, they were in search of a star. After LeBron, they'll still be in search of stars. They are a franchise that is committed to championships. So LeBron is a part of that, but we can't forget the impact that LeBron has on these players now. Their greatest player that they've ever seen is LeBron James.
Listen, and real quick, I just want to remind the audience, there has been a moment of potential crisis for LeBron's teams every time he's changed teams. And there have been columns written saying that they lose to the Mavs. That wasn't the crisis yet. Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett are then talking cash money in LeBron's face. Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals, down 3-2 against Boston. And the stories are written. LeBron James is never going to fulfill his promise, never going to win a championship. He puts up the 45-15-5. They win the title. It goes to Cleveland 4 years later. They lose the first year in the finals. They're down 3-1. Story's written. LeBron's never going to deliver on his promise. I'd be careful writing the stories. 4 years after that, LeBron's never going to deliver on his promise in L.A.
All right, let's move on to the NFL now. The Combine is this weekend. All eyes will be on Heisman winner Kyler Murray. How tall is he? How big are his hands? Can he win over general managers? However, when it comes to his play on the field, wait till you hear who our own Joel Klatt has compared him to.
I think he's better on both accounts than Michael Vick, who was a unanimous number one overall pick. Michael Vick had a really strong arm, a howitzer. Okay, Josh Allen-esque. I mean, this dude could throw it. But as a runner and a passer, Kyler is better than Michael Vick was.
See, I'm curious what you think about what Joel Klatt had to say.
Well, it's obvious he's a better thrower. Michael Vick was never a good thrower of the football. There's a lot of people that you'd be like, oh, he's a better thrower than Michael Vick. Cam Newton, when he came out, oh, man, comparison to Michael Vick, bigger version of Michael Vick, substantially throws the ball a lot. Now, as far as the comparison, Michael Vick and the running, the thing I'll say with Joel Klatt is the running with Kyler is totally different than the running with Michael Vick. Michael Vick was a, man, you could call one of the oldest plays in the book, 18 sweep. The quarterback's the one number going through the eight hole. The quarterback get the ball and run around the right end. From Little League football, that's one of the first plays that they run. The best athlete's going to be the quarterback, and that's who Michael Vick was at 6 foot. Michael Vick was a violent runner. Michael Vick was unbelievably tough. He had the type of grit and everything that running backs have, but he just happened to be a quarterback. So how he ran the football is totally different. Kyler is a pocket passer. So when he drops back in the pocket and you see all these running lanes in front of him, he has the pick of the litter. He's more like a punt returner playing quarterback. Michael Vick is like a running back. So Michael Vick was special how he did it. Cam Newton is like a big, bruising, Mike Allstott type running back. So you can say Kyler's better than him because Kyler doesn't take bigger hits, but he's running in space because people have to defend the field. They have to stay in their passing coverage. They have to have a different set of disciplines. When you watch him running, it's more like, oh, I'm a punt returner. I get the ball in space, make a guy miss. Michael Vick is running through people. He's making contact.
Listen. Kyler Murray is far and away a more polished and better passer right now than maybe Vic ever became.
Yes.
Certainly at Virginia Tech. Vic's last year at Virginia Tech, he threw for 1,200 yards. Threw for 1,200 yards and was the consensus number one overall pick. You know why? Because we watched those games and we had never, not Randall Cunningham, not Steve Young, not Fran Tarkington.
No.
We had never seen a quarterback who could run like Vic does. So with respect to Joel, and I understand the numbers actually support Joel's argument. Kyler ran for 1,000 yards this year. Vic's career high at Virginia Tech was under 700. Man, I watched those games. I was a high schooler in awe watching Michael Vick take his team to the brink of a national championship his freshman year and then be almost as good the next year, where it was, you knew to stop Virginia Tech's offense, you had to stop Vic running the football, and you couldn't do it. He's taller than Kyler, he's certainly thicker than Kyler, and he is faster than Kyler because he's faster than just about everybody. Like, so you can make the argument Kyler's going to be a better pro, whatever, but he is not a better runner of the football than Michael Vick. Michael Vick is the most dynamic runner of the football as a quarterback we've ever seen. Cam might be the most effective because he can do it so long.
Mm-hmm.
He's so big. He can take the punishment. But the fear Vic instilled in other teams with his legs was unlike any quarterback at the collegiate or pro level we've seen. That's not a knock on Kyler. Everybody fails the Mike Vick test in that regard, in my eyes, with respect to Joel Klatt.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.